Welcome to Unique Connections at the Table. I'm Dr. Beverly Samways, and each episode we invite you to join the conversation and discover new ways of seeing the world, particularly in relation to those with learning disabilities. So pull up a chair, the table's set, and we're so glad you're here.
Jenny. So nice to have you here on Zoom. So we wanted to have a bit of a chat about the work that we do, and I particularly wanted to ask you about what you bring to Unique Connections and your contribution that I value so much.
Thank you.
So talk us through your like professional history. What's your background?
Sure. So in about 2007, I trained as a primary school teacher. And I realised at that point that I was much more interested in the pastoral work than the actual teaching of the class. So from that, I went into working in safeguarding and pastoral in secondary schools. And although I loved it, I noticed that the same presentations were coming up again and again. So I was working with a lot of young people who self-harmed and a lot of young people who had really complex histories, and just making it into the classroom was a really big issue. So I felt like, actually, I'm able to do this work, but I don't have as much understanding as I would like to be able to make the difference that I would like to. And that led me to becoming a psychotherapist. So I did a master's in integrative psychotherapy. And that means that I kind of cherry pick different ideas from different modalities, different types of therapy. And I kind of go, this works for this person in this situation. And this thing works for this person in this situation. And I found that so helpful because whoever it is that we're working with, our circumstances to how we got to where we are is very different. But there will be some common themes and common ways that we can kind of meet some of the needs it is that people have. Mm-hmm. And kind of whilst training, I became much more interested into the world of self-harm and self-injury. And it's something that I'd studied a little bit in my undergrad, but I kind of went, actually, I need to know a bit more. So I started reading a bit more and ended up doing some lecturing for some universities and some colleges around self-harm, and then took on a role as a project manager working with 10 to 19 year olds all over the UK who currently self-harm, but would like to consider a life free from self-harm. And I ran that project for 4 years. And ended up writing some books for parents, professionals around self-harm at the same time, and also writing some workbooks for young people to be able to do themselves or with somebody alongside them. And that's all looking at kind of what has happened to us to get us to where we are now, and what do we need to change and shift around and discover about ourselves to be able to move on to the next step of what we want our future to look like.
Nice. I love that. And that's the Illumina resources, isn't it? Which we've signposted on our resources page in the website.
Yes.
Amazing work. So I know that through the Illumina work, you work, often work with young people with neurodiversity. But I guess through Unique Connections, we typically work with young people with more severe learning disabilities and autism. And often those young people have no spoken communication or very little. What do you think, how's that been transitioning from, I guess, like a mainstream, we might call, environment into a more like specialist or niche setting? Has there been any big differences? Does it feel like completely different work or not really? Or how's that been?
I think there are two things that have really stood out to me. And one is within mainstream work, we have an idea of we will fix what is going on.
Right.
And then when that person is fixed, then they're then able to attend school regularly. They're then able to get GCSEs and A-levels. Mm. We just need to get through the fixing.
Right.
And people kind of go, here you are, you know, fix this situation. Mm. And I don't believe that it's that simple. I think as people, we are much more complex than this. And that's something that I don't see happening so much within the learning disabilities world. There isn't that same mentality of we have to fix this problem.
Yeah.
But the other thing that really comes to mind also is that diagnosis comes first and person comes second in a lot of the conversations that we've had. And
Completely.
I have asthma, but I never end up saying to somebody, I have asthma and I am also all of these things. You know, some things I'm messy, but I don't go, I have asthma and therefore I'm messy, those kind of things. And I'm really struck by how often it is that in conversations that we have, things are put down to, well, this young person is self-injuring because of their diagnosis linked to this.
That's so true. And it's not always, sometimes it's that explicit, but sometimes it's almost like people signpost to the diagnosis, don't they? So we might ask a question, you know, what do you think is going on for this young person? And one of the responses might be, well, they do have a severe learning disability, as if that somehow explains everything or tells you everything that you need to know about the person. Or if you ask about comprehension, they might say, well, you know, they're autistic. So as if that, and of course, everybody's comprehension is both different and variable, depending on moment to
Absolutely.
moment in the day.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think sometimes when you're working in mainstream, people will carry a label of the trauma that they've experienced. So, of course, it's understandable that this young person self-harms because this is what they've gone through beforehand. And I think that isn't something that I had seen in some conversations that we had in some presentations with young people who also have a learning disability. It almost feels like those things might have happened, however, they're not talked about or they're not noticed, or the idea that the young person isn't aware that these things have happened, that kind of thing. So they feel like a very sort of, we're kind of holding all of these tensions, aren't we, of all these things that are going on and kind of going, well, what impacts, what's happening here?
Yeah, that's so true. There's definitely an assumption sometimes that because a child hasn't mentioned a previous trauma and hasn't got a way of signposting back to their historic trauma or difficult experience, that somehow it's evaporated into the air and it's no longer impacting the child. And I think that's to do with the complexity of holding the reality that, you know, that there's a young person that needs support for a whole host of reasons, and in addition, is carrying trauma. It just feels overwhelming. So I think it gets dropped because it's too much. And I guess that's some of what we end up doing, is it sort of bringing the story back into the frame, and thinking about the life that the individual's lived and what they might be trying to express and how we can find ways for that story to be part of their reality rather than something that feels locked down or muted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think sometimes we can believe that we encounter people and we are seeing the whole of them. And so often what we're seeing is just a very small snapshot without knowing even what it is that's happened that day for somebody, let alone in the months and years before that. And that's really shaped some of the thinking I think that we have done with some of the young people that we have met with Unique Connections. Some of the young people that we've worked with over time are thinking, okay, what is the big picture of what's happening here? And what is missing for this person at the moment? And how we can build connection, because so often it seems like it's connection that is missing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, almost as if it's easy for teams to get into a mindset where they want to fix the behavior, almost as if the behavior is an addition to the young person, and that it can be isolated and sorted out, rather than seeing, rather than wanting to connect with the young person themselves,
Absolutely.
work relationally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think one of the contributions that I really value that you bring to our work is to be able to often articulate what's going on and from a therapeutic perspective, and to read between the lines and see what's happening for an individual. And I particularly wanted to go back to and ask you about a comment that you made recently in one of our reflective practice sessions with a team. I found it so fascinating. I just wanted to ask you to like unpick it a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, so it was the context was we're working with a team that's supporting a young person who has significant distress and has episodes of distress in which she displays aggression towards herself and others. And we were asking about an update as the team has been using a different approach. And one of the team members said that she was continuing to get upset, but she was seeking comfort from staff members rather than expressing aggression towards them or towards herself. She's obviously great progress. And you commented that she is able to present herself rather than the behavior. I'll say that again. She was able to present herself rather than the behavior. Like, can you unravel that a little bit? Because I thought it felt spot on, but what were you seeing in that moment?
Absolutely. And for me, that is the heart of working therapeutically with somebody and having a therapeutic approach is being able to see the person
Yeah.
rather than the behavior, but also making a person feel accepted and welcome and safe that they can bring themselves rather than the behavior.
Yeah.
And in a way, a lot of us do this. So we know that it's socially acceptable to smile and say hello and do all of those kind of things, even when we're not feeling it. But we will have some people in our lives who are really important to us, where we can actually go, if they say, how are we doing? We can go, I'm having a really tough day at the moment. And we don't need to bring a fake behavior of smiling and being happy in those moments. We can bring our true selves. But the same thing also happens with self-harm and self-injury and all kinds of other presentations as well. They can be something that we can go to as an individual because it can provide a safety and it can provide almost a known outcome. If I do this, I know what happens. And often over time, that can be learnt and practiced to a place that then becomes almost safer because we know what is the cause and effect of these things. And that's not saying that it's always a choice that somebody's making, but it is often something that has become safer. And we keep saying the word safer, but it becomes safer to bring that rather than bring their true self, because it's a cost and it's a fear of bringing ourselves and knowing that we are welcome.
Yeah, that's so insightful. And of course, what had been the backdrop to this is that the team had started to name her emotion. So had started to say, rather than, oh no, she's upset, let's distract or cheer her up, had simply started to say, we can see that you're sad. We can see that you're crying, and then had begun to start using some of those reflective conversations that we often teach around just sitting with that emotion and finding a containing space for it. And then this had developed into her being able to present herself as distressed and that being enough rather than having to to escalate into a physical display of that, which was going to lead to an altercation. Yeah, that's so helpful. And it's an interaction, isn't it? It wasn't that she got better, it's
Yeah.
that the interaction between the staff and her began to find some safety and some mutuality, so that she could respond in a different way. Yeah,
I
love that.
think the thing that feels so important to me about interactions like that is that it's a moment when a person feels seen. And I feel like humans all over the world are desperately so seeking to be seen and to be noticed for who it is that they are and what it is that they can bring and to be accepted for those things. And in that moment, the team working with that young person were able to see her and be able to see that she was distressed.
Thanks, Jen. That's yeah, lovely to hear you talking about that, and yeah, just unpick some of your contribution to what we bring into those spaces.
Thank you. It's been lovely to chat with you.
Thanks so much for listening today. Before you go, can you help us with something? We want to make sure these conversations reach the people who need to hear them. So if there's someone you think would benefit from listening to this, we would just love it if you shared it. See you next time.